You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Diving into the mailbag on today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns, we are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow the show on Twitter and on Instagram at Locked On PHX Suns, and you can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Kleen 14. If you are new here, welcome in. I cover the Suns and the NBA at SB Nation, Forbes, and Dime Mag, which means that you come here not only to get the latest insight, news, and rumors around the Phoenix Suns, but you come here to learn how it fits into the broader context of the NBA every single morning right in your feed. That is what we're going to do today, is dive into some bigger picture topics, courtesy of you guys. I got several mailbag questions, mostly a lot of people already looking to the trade deadline, and thinking about this team as a playoff team, and which is really exciting, and I want to get into that. I want to also get into some questions about the point guard situation, or the guard situation with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, as well as the future there. Got a good question on that, and it's, you know, we're not too far from March Madness. I think it's time to maybe start looking at some names in the draft, so I'll drop those in to close things out as well. The questions, as always, came from Twitter, where you can follow one more time again for you guys, at Locked On PHX Suns, and on Reddit, the Suns subreddit, our Suns, and a couple good questions from each place. So let's dive right in here. From Ira Lex, or Air Alex, oh my goodness, that was the most embarrassing incorrect pronunciation that I think I've ever done. Air Alex 28 is clearly what it is. Why do you think the Booker and Paul pairing hasn't worked too well so far, and do you think it will end up working? Well, I'll answer the last part first. Yes, I do think that the good money, the smart money, is on this all-star tandem figuring it out. I don't think anything I've seen makes me feel like that they don't fit together, or that either guy is not capable of being what they were last year. Now, with Chris Paul, things are, you know, worth monitoring a little bit more closely because he's older and in his mid-30s now. I think, you know, every year it's a open question if he can keep it up. But the good part here is it's not as if Chris Paul has been a bad player this year, and so I still feel pretty good about everything. What I will say about Chris Paul is that his overall three-point shooting has been probably the single biggest thing from either one of these players that you would point to as a reason that it hasn't worked at its highest level so far. We haven't seen, you know, Paul and Booker play off of one another at an elite level. You haven't seen the damage that they can do to defenses when the defense feels like it can't keep track of both players. None of that has really happened, at least not on the same night at the same high level, you know, for a full 48 minutes. We really just haven't seen that. And I think the three-point shooting on Paul's part is a big reason why. He's only shooting 30% from the three-point line, which is in the 14th percentile among point guards in the NBA, according to Cleaning the Glass. It would be, if it held, the lowest mark of Chris Paul's career since his rookie season, and just uncharacteristic. I've mentioned it a ton of times. The last time we saw Chris Paul in the NBA for the Thunder in the bubble, he was raining threes on Robert Covington, especially finding those switches, punishing those defenders on Houston's team, and not even just Houston. I mean, he was doing it all season long last year, and he's not been that guy as a deep shooter. That's the biggest one. A couple other things, though. You go to the passing tracking on NBA.com here in their stats page, and you see, you compare it to last year, first of all, and Paul is just making and receiving a ton more passes. That's evidence to me that this Phoenix system is really working, and it's working just as well as it did last year, even with a different set of personnel. You know, more shooting, less attacking, less of a scorer or more of a scorer at the point guard position rather than Ricky Rubio, on and on. It's pretty much the same. It's not quite the top of the NBA in passing, but when you zoom in, 22.2% of Chris Paul's passes have gone to Devin Booker. That's pretty good. It's him and DeAndre Ayton, right? That's, I mean, at face value, pretty awesome. You get your amazing Hall of Fame level point guard. That guy gives the ball, sets up your two best young scorers. But when you look a little bit closer, only 1.1 assists are going to Devin Booker per game from Chris Paul. That's fifth on the team, tied with Cam Johnson. And so that's a problem. 2.2 assists from Paul are going to DeAndre Ayton. That's not a problem. But to see the shooters, Crowder, Bridges, and Johnson, all getting more assists than Devin Booker, that's puzzling. And so maybe things even out, but even if you just try to think like just three-point field goals, because we know Devin Booker is going to create his own shot sometimes. He'll score in transition. He'll, you know, get the ball in isolation and just go to work. But even if you just look at the three-point shots, he's getting 1.9 threes a game off of assists from Chris Paul, if I'm reading this right. And he's only, first of all, making 21.4%, so it's evidence that those aren't the easiest threes that Booker's getting right now. But he's getting less of those opportunities than Crowder and Cam, and basically the same amount as Bridges. And so that's not where you want things to be. I mean, yes, we know Booker likes to get in the mid-range, and he's improved as a finisher, but if you can get a clean three for Booker from Chris Paul, that's about as good of a shot as you could imagine. And so as you zoom in, and just overall, like, Booker's only shooting 32% off of passes from Chris Paul this year. Not really what you want. And you're not seeing Booker setting up Paul. Maybe that's not going to happen. We saw that quite a bit. Booker setting Ricky Rubio up for open threes. That's not quite how the offense functions. You're seeing Paul get most of his passes, receive his passes, mostly from bigs, Crowder, Ayton, and Bridges in particular. Some of that top of the key ball, just back and forth across the arc to reverse it and set up a new set or just scramble the defense. And that's probably something you could expect to hold. But that takes me to my final point here, which is you can just tell that this team, Monty Williams, the coaching staff, they haven't settled on a set of sets or even just pretty quick hitting actions between Booker and Paul late in games that work. And I think back to that Dallas game to start the season off, where in back-to-back possessions, Booker and Paul hit mid-range jumpers to put the Mavericks away from pretty much the same position. I'm sure a lot of you guys remember those shots, their elbow mid-range jumpers, almost identical from each of them. And it was like, okay, here we go. This is what we signed up for if you're the Phoenix Suns, and this is what you're afraid of if you're the rest of the Western Conference. And it just hasn't really happened. We haven't seen them be able to get those switches. And part of it is, like I mentioned, Paul not dominating those switches as much, but they don't have a go-to set of actions that those two guys can be involved in a late game situation that's going to get either one of them an awesome shot. And that's a problem. And that's something I think you'll hope to see as things move along, is what can they do in crunch time to get both of those guys involved in good position, getting to their spots and rhythm to score in crunch time the way we know they both can. And that's what I'm going to continue to look for. That'll be the biggest thing, because we don't really need much proof that they can do it separately. I expect Paul's shooting to get better. I expect Booker's shooting to get better. I expect Booker to get to the free throw line more. All that stuff we know, feel pretty confident will happen. What the two of them do together in those crunch situations is really important, because they have some stuff like Spain pick and roll or different pin downs and stuff, but a lot of it hasn't worked in late game situations, and you don't want to run things that are maybe that all that complicated. And we just haven't seen them really settle on a few things that are going to work over and over and over. And we need to, because otherwise it's not working at the absolute highest level. More on the future of the point guard position in the next segment, but first I want to tell you about the first sponsor of today's show, which is Bet Online. Well, the Super Bowl is wrapping up the NFL season, but there's NBA, NHL, college basketball every single night. And there's only one place that has you covered for all your betting needs and only one place we trust on the Locked On Podcast Network. That is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. My bet of the day for you guys, though, is not on any of the sports that I just mentioned. It's the Masters. We have futures bets in golf all the way through the end of the year, all the major tournaments. And if you go to the Masters here, yes, last year's winner, Dustin Johnson, is in the lead. This is April 8th, guys, is when the Masters begin. So we're a little ways out. Some things will change here. But I'm zooming in here on some of the people who finished in the top portion of the leaderboard last year and are very undervalued right now. Maybe it's unrelated. Maybe I paid not enough attention and these guys are off the map. But Sungjae Im, the South Korean golfer who finished tied for second, is currently plus 4,000. And Cameron Smith, who is the Australian golfer who tied for second, is plus 5,500. Maybe there's something about Augusta that works for those guys. I like the idea of betting for them just to see what happens, make it a little bit more fun. Maybe don't take too much money there, but it does always make it fun to root for an underdog, root for somebody who maybe could make history, repeat their miraculous 2020 tournaments. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action, and don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, the name of our network, to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Back here with a question from Twitter, looking at the future of the Suns' point guard position, from Garrett Halvey at ghalvey27. But first, I wanted to remind you guys, if you have not checked it out, Locked On Today with Peter Bukowski, the newest show on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm not just flaunting it, telling you guys about it because that's what I'm paid to do or because it's on our network. I love it. I listened to the first two episodes as soon as I could. They're perfect. You get the headlines, you get the scores, everything you need to know. It's like SportsCenter, but better because it's audio, because it's Peter, because it's quicker, and because you get the local insight from all around the country with the experts on each game or moment or debate that's going on in the sports world that day. Okay, at ghalvey27, Garrett Halvey asks, do we see a scenario where we develop a future starting point guard to groom with Chris Paul still here? And is there an ideal point guard coming out of the draft that fits for the Suns, but that is also realistic? By realistic, I'm assuming he means not somebody who's not within reach. We know the Suns are not going to be drafting in the lottery if all goes according to plan this year. So that does change the calculus a little bit. We're not talking about the John Morants or the De'Aaron Foxes of the world anymore. We are looking at maybe the back half of the draft this time around, and that does change things. I want to first say that it's probably the single, maybe the DeAndre Ayton stuff is a more pressing question for this team. But what they do into the future at point guard is one of the most important and interesting questions about this roster going forward. And what I'll have to say here is that they don't have one. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? You look down the roster, who's even somebody you could consider the point guard of the future, unless Cameron Payne improves by leaps and bounds and already in sort of his age prime here in his mid-20s. It's not a guy that's here, right? That's fairly obvious. They hardly even have any point guards on the roster. So you start to think, well, you know, it's not often you really trade or sign for somebody like that because those players don't become available around the league. You don't really see starting level point guards become available, and the Suns also are not really in a position to have much salary cap flexibility. So you're really looking at the draft, and you're really looking at the back half of the draft, and that's just the position the Suns are in. They had this 10th pick this year. They had Kyra Lewis and Tyrese Halliburton on the board with some guard skill set, especially Kyra Lewis, and they didn't they didn't go there. And so here's who I would have my eye on if I'm the Phoenix Suns, or if I'm a Suns fan maybe looking to watch some college basketball, maybe who to keep an eye on in the NCAA tournament. A few names for you guys, and I'm pulling from Jeremy Wu and Sam Vecenie, who are, I think, the two best draft guys out there outside of ESPN. So here's the names. David Johnson of Louisville, who is 6'5", and has improved his shooting. It's one of those one-year leaps that's maybe a little bit hard to trust, but he's getting a lot more playing time, more consistent rotation piece this year, and has started all 13 games for Louisville. So he's shooting 43% from three, 13 points a night. He improved his assist-to-turnover ratio a bit, but the turnovers are still a little high. He doesn't quite fit the mold of a ideal Suns draft pick in that he, you know, doesn't seem to always have the best decision making. I've not watched a ton of this guy, but you know, reading about him and the stats, I think that's sort of where I'm at. He's a guy that I will be taking a closer look at as well. But just for a lot of those reasons, not somebody I've watched too closely from a Suns perspective, but Trey Mann, I think, is the guy you want to keep an eye on. I actually think it's a decent shot David Johnson is not even available by the time that the Suns do pick, but Trey Mann seems to be probably the guy I would say is you know, 1A right now for the Suns. He's big at 6'6". He can shoot the lights out of the ball at 40% from deep this season so far. He also impacts the game in a variety of ways as a rebounder, as a playmaker, as a turnover creator, as a defensive player. And with that size, you know, he's able to impact the game in all these different ways. He's positive on offense and defense, according to Box Plus Minus here on Basketball Reference. This is the guy, and he's just a sophomore. So he has the experience that we know the Suns cherish, but he's not a senior or somebody that is going to be very close to their prime by the time you draft him. So Trey Mann's probably the guy, the number one guy that I would have my eyes on as I make my way through the college season as a Suns fan. The other name I'll bring up here is Ayo Dosunmu from Illinois. He's a guy that's been in the college ranks for quite a while now. Sam Vecenie had him going 24th in his mock draft earlier in January, but he's improved his three-point shooting. Doesn't take a lot, but has improved that over the course of his time in college, and is also has some size, some defensive versatility, can get to the bucket a little bit, and, you know, probably defense is going to be the biggest thing for him. But when you have Devin Booker, you're not needing a, you know, number one, super controlling, impacting every possession sort of point guard like Chris Paul, you know, coincidentally, although Paul has adapted a little bit as his career has gone on. So I think Dosunmu, it makes a little bit of sense, especially maybe if the Suns exceed expectations and they do finish in maybe the 20s come draft night, which is not unlikely at all. So those are three names for you guys: David Johnson, Trey Mann, Ayo Dosunmu, and we'll see more guys as the college season goes along, as the conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament take place. We always see some names. Dacian Nix is the last guy I probably would say. He, you know, really did not look good in the G League film that a lot of these draft reporters got to look at. He's not a Suns guy, in my opinion. He doesn't seem to have great decision making, doesn't seem to have much of a jump shot right now, 3-point shot, so probably not somebody on the Suns' radar in a major way. He's also in the G League and is not going to college and is very raw and young. None of that seems to fit the mold of how James Jones has drafted. So another name, but probably not that likely. So Garrett, there is the answer to your question as I see it. They certainly need to target a player like that, but at the same time, it's not going to be easy. Even in a deep draft, even in a draft in 2021 that I like, that a lot of teams seem to like, that reporters are praising, it's not going to be easy to find a guy when you're not drafting in the lottery. And it's the most pressing thing, I think, long term about building out this roster, because they don't necessarily have the salary cap space to do it. Players like that don't become available, and it's really not likely that they would try to put together a trade while Chris Paul is still on the roster. So you're probably going to see the draft be the way, and you probably need to see that sooner rather than later so that you can groom that player while Chris Paul is still under contract and on this team, and before you need that player when Chris Paul ultimately leaves this team, whether it's soon in free agency or even if he were to retire here. It's not all that far in the future, and you want to get that guy developing as soon as you can. So that closes us out there. That was an interesting question, and I think a fun one. The last question, I want to go back to Reddit, and we will do that right after another quick break to tell you about the second sponsor of today's show, which is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market. I'm making my way through my stash. I was actually really disappointed today. I got all the way to work, clocked in, and forgot that I did not take a Built Bar with me in the car. I had just done a quick workout at home in my living room, as we all are these days, and meant to grab a Built Bar to not be starving while I was trying to clock in and get to work, and I forgot it. Did not take the Built Bar with me, did not remind myself, and that's where I am now. I like these things so much that I'm actually disappointed when I don't get to eat one, and that's because they're perfect for any moment. That's what I love to tell you guys about with the Built Bar. A lot of these are meal substitutes from other brands. You'll get, you know, 400-calorie monster that's supposed to be your lunch or your breakfast, or you'll get something that's just gross and doesn't taste good, and it's only there to shove a bunch of stuff into your body that you obviously need, but we don't want to eat stuff that tastes bad. So Built Bar threads that needle perfectly. It's low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and tastes delicious every single time. I tried the German chocolate cake recently. I highly recommend that one, but any flavor, you really can't go wrong. There's a ton of different options for any type of palate. And right now, with every purchase, you're getting a free cooler. So I have my pack that I've been bragging about, but I didn't get the cooler. You guys have that opportunity, and especially if you live in the Valley, you cannot go wrong. Got to keep them cool, because even that sun can do a number during the winter. So go to BuiltBar.com right now. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, the name of our network, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Alrighty, back here, closing out the show with one last question from our Suns, the Suns subreddit. I want to tell you guys to check out Rejecting the Screen, our interview show on the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. Adam Stenko, Noah Kozlov, they do great stuff. I've put segments of their show in our show before. They did an awesome interview with Sean Marion last year. They did a great series with guys like Howard Beck and Jeff Zilgit, NBA media personalities about their careers. They just have connections in this industry like almost nobody else out there. And the best part is that they interview like no one else out there. And so you get these guests and you get Noah and Adam asking them questions. And it's really a perfect show. It's awesome. It's a nice balance to a lot of what we do here. So they are doing a Kobe Bryant special this week, talking to players, journalists, teammates, anyone who competed against, played with, covered Kobe Bryant. Not so much looking back on the passing of him and his daughter last year, but of his career and the legend that he built. That's an awesome, awesome two-part show that they did this week. So check all of it out. But here we are, closing out the show. As I said, we're getting this question from Damani on the Suns subreddit. The Suns play the Warriors on Thursday, which will be the first time that Kelly Oubre suits up against the Suns since he was traded. Is this going to be an FU game for him? And what predictions do you have for his stat line? Oh, I'm really sad for Kelly, to be honest. I think that situation, I think, is still a good one for him, where he gets to play in a competitive situation much better than Oklahoma City, and be in a system where he still doesn't have to do too much. And he can, you know, focus on defense, honestly, a lot more. But man, have his shooting numbers been pretty frustrating lately, or more so to start the season, a little bit better lately. But overall, not the season that he needed to have heading into free agency again. He's shooting still just 22% from deep, 36% from the field. So in answer to your question, Damani, I don't feel like I can predict a high-scoring game from him, even with the added impetus to show off or show up the Suns, right? But All that said, I do think he'll come in here determined. I do think he'll want to kind of show out, but I'm probably going to say probably something right in his season averages. I can't get too much more excited than that. So 12 points, 6 rebounds. And I'm going to say that Kelly gets maybe a couple threes in and probably talks plenty of trash. I would say he probably has a couple demonstrative fouls and probably a couple jarring moments maybe with some of the players. That would be my guess, because I would be pretty determined if I was him to come in and show what he, you know, what the Suns lost, what they're missing, even if we all know that the trade was probably quite worth it in the long run. He's every right to be sort of disappointed with how things ended. I think he wanted to be here and he wants to show that he has a place in this league. And so he's going to come in and show us that, I think, and show the Suns that. And while there won't be any fans for him to get the attention of, the whole front office still sits in on these games in person every night. So he probably will have some words, some maybe unspoken words to share with them through his play. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun. Unfortunately, Marquese Chriss not able to play with that broken leg, but Kelly Oubre will be back in Phoenix Suns Arena one more time. And then I wanted to close the show out actually talking trades here, because we had a question as well from Garrett on Twitter asking about possible trades to improve the team. And I wanted to quickly sift through Shams Charania's reporting today that Lonzo Ball and J.J. Redick are both available, and that teams have started to talk about those two. New Orleans' season has not started the way that they want. They need to kind of chart a course forward here, and Lonzo is not able to get an extension signed with the Pelicans and could be, you know, he could be on the move. I think it's fair to say Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Kyra Lewis, both in there as well. Nikhil Alexander-Walker is playing incredible basketball as a scorer and as a playmaker, so earning some rotation spot for himself. And this team's about to get expensive, so it's not a surprise. All that said, I don't think Lonzo Ball is a fit here. I don't think the Suns would want to take that on. I don't think that he fits with the way that they play. I think that his style needs to be clearly delineated by a coaching staff that maximizes what he's good at. You want a team that runs, probably. You want a team where his team defense can still be impactful, but he won't be exposed on the ball. That's a very tough needle to thread, and maybe we just need to understand that the defensive guy we thought he could be, maybe that's not there. Maybe his limitations as a three-point shooter, maybe he's more of what Austin Rivers has become and more of like a 3-and-D guard, but more so of a team defensive player than an on-ball guy. That might be his ultimate legacy course of his career at this point, and that's just not a super valuable player. It's also not one who really fits all that well into how the Suns play, and they don't really need much in the way of starting caliber or guys who think that they're starting caliber guards. However, I think J.J. Redick does make some sense here. You know, the way we've seen Langston Galloway impact the game, and even, you know, the way that we've seen a guy like Javon Carter when he gets hot, or what we thought Etuan Moore could be potentially, that does have a value here. And you can see Monty doesn't necessarily, even Abdel Nader, put him in there. Like, that group, Monty doesn't trust any one of them. All of them are fine. They're not going to kill you while they're on the floor, but no one's really getting more than 10 to 15 minutes most nights. No one's really earned that every single night I have to be in the rotation kind of spot here. But Redick would, and he's expensive. I don't really know. I mean, the Suns are going to have to get creative no matter who they target in the trade market. And unless they're willing to like get rid of Dario Saric or one of these young guys like Cam Johnson or Jalen Smith, it just gets tight. It gets pretty tight in terms of stacking up salaries, and there's not an easy path toward it. Maybe it's a three teams type of situation. Maybe things just don't really work out for the Suns. But as we start to look, I think a scoring / shooting threat in the backcourt is a need, and I think more depth in the front court. Just an innings eating center. I've talked about JaVale McGee a ton. I talked about Gorgui Dieng in the past, guys like that. Those are probably the needs I'm looking at to fill out the rotation and feel better about things heading into the playoffs. So That's probably where I would look, J.J. Redick. I think Larry Nance is an option in the front court. I really like him if the Cavs are indeed sniffing around on some of that stuff. Their entire roster is probably mostly on the rumor mill at the very least, outside of Sexton, Garland, and Okoro. I would say almost everybody there is gettable. So I like Nance. I like McGee. Those are some names. I don't want to, peeled through too many because we don't know who's available, but that's some of what I would be looking at if I'm the Suns based on who we know is available right now. But honestly, guys, this roster is pretty darn good. They're a pretty good team still, even at 8-7. I think they can get back on track this week. I previewed those games on Tuesday, and Brandon and I talked about on Monday how the Suns can win even without Devin Booker in the lineup. So if you are on your podcast app right now, just scroll, find those shows, check that stuff out. I will be back with you late Wednesday night to recap the Thunder game and late Thursday night to recap the Warriors game and close out the week that way with a couple of game shows. But subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Do not miss an episode. Great stuff coming for you throughout the rest of the week. And before we know it, we'll be back on Monday with Brandon as always. So check out Locked On Today. Check out Rejecting the Screen. And I will be back right here after the buzzer on Wednesday.